Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. Tis the season for philanthropy, and you conducted a roundtable, seated with you some foundation executives.
Yeah, this was a group we got together a couple of weeks ago. Mike Gorehaus of the Community Foundation for the Holland Zeeland area, Holly Johnson at the Fry Foundation, Diana Seeger at the Grand Rapids Community Foundation, and Jennifer Wilson at the Metro Health Hospital Foundation. And this is a section we had in our edition of MIBiz this week, looking at philanthropy. And we do these roundtables on occasion with folks in a particular industry, get folks together in a room and have a conversation with them about what's going on, what's changing, what's emerging. And they had some interesting things to say about how their business is changing. You're seeing a whole new generation of philanthropists that look at things a little differently. They're just as generous as their parents and grandparents, but now they're more interested in causes, and they're particularly interested in outcomes. I provide this donation, this gift to this cause, what's that generating? They want results. They want outcomes. And they're asking for transparency, and they're asking for that data to know and to understand exactly what's working and what's not working. And they have a view of things that, okay, if this isn't working, why keep going? Let's pivot and find something else that does work to address this situation and this problem.
I remember a term, triple bottom line.
That's still there, you know, so that sustainability and, you know, building that social structure to support any number of problems out there in the world and to try to address them. And what's that immediate and what is that economically sustainable solution that you can continue to fund and support and continue to generate outcomes to resolve an issue in a community or address an issue in a community?
Well, the funding has changed in recent years, too. There have been changes to standard deductions. Did you talk about that issue and how it's impacting philanthropies?
Yeah, we talked about that, and we also had a separate story about it in this week's edition of MIBiz. You know, a year ago, Congress, almost a year ago, passed the federal tax reform, and that changed the standard deduction. It doubled the standard deduction for individuals and married couples. What does that mean for giving? Well, that means fewer people will itemize their tax returns come next year. If you're not itemizing, you're not taking those tax deductions, including for charitable giving. There is concern, and it's at a different level depending on who you talk to. Some see it as a big concern. Some are not as worried about it, about how will that affect giving and philanthropy. You know, it goes back to that heart of why do people give? You know, a lot of folks want to address a cause. They have a cause they believe in, they want to address it. Some giving is driven, maybe the amount, on whether folks get that tax deduction. You know, can they deduct that off their taxes and their tax obligation? And the general view I got out of the group was the amount might be affected by that, but not the reasons. They're not seeing any changes yet this year. It's only been a year. It's early on. They're keeping an eye on it. And an interesting point that the Mike Gorehaus from the Community Foundation in the Holland Zeeland area brought up is part of what they've been doing is talking to those financial advisors, the accountants, the wealth management folks who work with high net worth individuals and help them kind of fashion their philanthropy and their annual giving. And what they've been trying to get the message out to them is don't tell your clients to quit giving, please. If you tell them that, you know, you're not going to get the benefits of this, well, then they're not going to give. So they're trying to reach out, and they have been reaching out to that advisor community to just give the message, please don't just take a black and white look at this. Please send a better message than, well, you have no reason to give anymore.
Giving Tuesday is a couple of weeks away. We just had an election last Tuesday.
Yeah, wasn't that fun to have
a week ago? A week ago Tuesday, I should say. And Michigan is the first state in the Midwest legalizing recreational use marijuana.
Yeah, and this passed by a pretty good clip, 56% to 44%. It comes a decade after the state's medical marijuana law passed, and that's been retooled a little bit to put a little order to it. This law will go into effect 10 days after it's certified by the Board of Canvassers, at least the election results, and boy, this raises a whole lot of questions. If you're an employer out there, what does this mean for you? The first bit of advice that folks tell us is, well, start talking to your counsel. to your legal counsel and get their take on what you should do. For folks who question this, it's like, first, no, you cannot go to work stoned. Just because we're legalizing marijuana in Michigan for recreational use doesn't mean you can go to work unable to perform your job. You need to show up for work able to produce and do your job and do it safely. But there are a lot of questions on how this is going to affect employers, and a lot of those questions may not have answers right now. So some of the advice we hear folks saying is, employers, talk to your legal counsel. Everybody's got a lawyer that advises their business. Get their take. Make sure your policies are well communicated. Make sure they're up to date and your HR policies. And this is going to take some time to work through. This is going to take some time to get sorted out, but this has some real implications for employers out there.
Well, you can't go to work drunk. You can't go to work stoned.
Pretty simple, isn't it?
It truly is. Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Services, big opening of a new structure in the springtime.
Yeah, this is coming in the spring of 2019. A psychiatric urgent care center. Now, we see these urgent care centers around for medical use. You know, and Patrick, we've all had that moment on a Saturday morning as parents where we wake up, the kid's got the fever, the ear's hurting, can't get in to see the doctor. Where do we take them? Well, the ER is not the good place for something like that because it's really not an emergency. Ah, the urgent care center works. Boom, that works. And we have a problem in this country and this state with access to behavioral health care. It's not in a good situation right now. We need more access. So Pine Rest is opening this psychiatric urgent care center next spring down on the south end of town for folks who are experiencing psychiatric symptoms. And what has been happening for a number of years, and it's a real problem, is these folks more often than not end up in an ER. And emergency rooms are not always equipped and staffed to handle these types of patients. They do their best, but then you got to bring in a psychiatric consult that's not always available, especially in off hours. So Pine Rest is seeking to address that issue, and it's going to be open 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It's a start. They hope to treat up to about 40 people a day, or at least assess and treat 40 people a day. Doesn't seem like a lot, but put 40 people a day by 365 days a year, that's a lot of folks who may otherwise show up in an ER, which is not the best setting for them. And there's this mantra in healthcare that today it's getting louder and louder, and I've heard it for many years. You need to treat people at the right place, at the right time, at the right location, with the right professionals. So it's a start for Pine Rest, and it shows some statistics when they announced this a couple weeks ago. In 2016, more than 14,000 ER visits at the three hospitals in Grand Rapids involved people with a behavioral health condition. That was their primary reason for being there. So again, 40 people a day is not a lot, but take that out over a full year, it can make a dent. And Pine Rest says, when I talked to Mark Eastberg, the CEO there, if this works and really starts generating the outcomes and works as intended, they'd like to do more of these locations, perhaps on their own at Pine Rest, or maybe in partnership with one of the health systems out there. You've got a number of these outpatient medical centers around the community, around the marketplace now. And Pine Rest is open if somebody wants to partner on another one of these urgent care psychiatric centers. They're willing to have sit down and have a conversation.
Well, the investment had to be made, right? So you've got to look at that return on the investment and the need that's out there.
Yeah, are you addressing the need? They're going to look at that outcomes data hard.
In the field, right, there's always that point of contact. Mm-hmm. And I'll just use, I won't name an EMS operation, but EMS shows up. Will there be a determination made in the field of which direction the ambulance heads?
You know, that's not there yet, but that's something that it's a great point about how do you run, when you run into somebody out in the field, they're not in a center, they're out in the field. Do you have a professional there who's trained and capable of assessing that situation, so it doesn't turn out badly? It's not there yet, but it's a real issue for EMS folks as well, is they run into somebody who's having a psychiatric episode, and they're not equipped necessarily to handle that individual.
They're going to end up at the ER.
Yep, and it ends up or worse, or can end up even worse or badly.
Well, it's a great story.
Yeah, so kudos to Pine Rest for starting this. You know, Mark Eastberg makes the point. It's a start. They're going to try this and see how it works, and if it works well, they can do more of it.
MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez in studio with us today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's good to be back and talk to you again in 2 weeks.